I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Thank you for the update, Pete. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. You are locked into 106.7 The Fan. Steve Phillips is on the Mattress Warehouse hotline. He is the host on network radio on MLB for the leadoff spot. He, of course, is a former Major League Baseball GM, and he's always great when we have him on the show. Steve, we wanted to get your insight on this dispute between the players and the owners right now. There's a lot of talk about if sports are coming back and who's going to play and who isn't, and yet in baseball we can't even get to the point where we're debating format because of the financial fight that's waging right now. Your thoughts on where we're at in this process?
Yeah, I think I'm sure there's a level of distrust that's actually steeper than I thought. I think we've had labor peace for a while. I figured we might be able to sort of work through this. Some level of distrust. And what's happened right now is the players are not willing to acknowledge, for whatever reason, like I can't imagine what they thought the language in the March 27th agreement meant when it said that both sides were discussing good faith, the economic feasibility of playing without fans. Like, I don't know what they thought they meant other than if fans aren't there, it changes the economics, or they have to renegotiate the deal that was about prorated salaries. The players seem to be digging in on that. And sure, they may not know exactly how much owners are losing, but there's not any reasonable person could look at this situation and say, okay, well, if you're playing without fans in the stands, and they're not paying for tickets, and they're not paying for concessions, they're not paying for parking, you're going to lose a lot of money. And therefore, paying 100% of the day rate for a player while you're making 60% or 65% or 70% or whatever percentage that is of the revenues, it's still a significant loss. The players seem unwilling to acknowledge that or to address the issue. The other thing for the owners, this part of the revenues that they're going to generate this year is going to come from the national TV playoff deal. And the fear that they have is that the second wave of the virus is going to come back. They're going to lose the playoffs and that they will have already paid the players and not be able to recoup the money that they gave the players by getting it out of the playoff share that they would be getting. And so I think that there seems to be a lack of acknowledgement about what is important to both sides. I think that's why we are where we are, where the owners made a proposal that was a non-starter for the union. The union's going to make a proposal with salaries and more games than the 82 that they're going to propose. And from the owner's perspective, they've projected losing $680,000 per game. And adding more games adds to the losses. And the reality is that if the players are unwilling to come off of the prorated salaries or create some other structure, then we're probably not going to play. And so I think that we're sort of at a stalemate right now. And I think it's got to start with the players acknowledging 100% pay is not appropriate.
Let's put Steve on hold because he's breaking up a little bit, Darm. We'll try to see if we can sort that out. Danny, your reaction to what he said there initially?
Really interesting. I mean, that is, I guess I'd say a little bit surprised that this he's basically putting the ball in the players' court when it comes to this. I mean, we're going to trust owner figures. We're going to trust owners that are going to tell you how much money they're going to lose when they're always crying foul there.
Follow up on when he comes back. But his point is a good one, which I haven't heard a whole lot about, which is the idea, and I don't have a lot of intel on what he's talking about in the deal, but basically, hey, we're going to negotiate in good faith if the crowds are not able to come to the stadiums. So Steve Phillips is with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. So, Steve, sorry, go ahead and finish your point. We lost you there.
Yeah, I'm not sure we lost me. But look, the idea that the owners can pay 100% of the day's rate of pay for the players when they're making 60% of the revenues just isn't appropriate or fair. And the reality is the owners would be better served financially to not play any games than to play games paying the prorated rate of pay without getting the revenues adjustment from the fans in the ballpark. And so, you know, there's got to be some middle ground. And both sides took extreme positions in their first proposals. They're both non-starters. Well, the union's response we haven't seen yet, but we're hearing that it's going to be prorated salaries with more games. And if the owners are losing, their projection is $680,000 per game, then adding more games adds to the losses. And adding more games pushes the season deeper into October, which puts the playoffs at risk. Because if the second wave of the virus comes back and we can't have the playoffs, that's where the owners are going to get the majority of the money to be able to pay the players' salaries that they've already paid up front. And so there's going to have to be some adjustment. The sliding scale proposal from the owners, I get why it was offensive to the players. The owners are claiming they're losing 40% of revenues without fans in the stands. And what they did is they assigned 33% of those losses to the players and took 7% to themselves. Because on average, their proposal on the sliding scale was a 33% pay cut off of the prorated salary. And so they gave the players 33% of that 40% they were losing, which doesn't seem fair. And the sliding scale, you know, sort of, you know, was socialism at its best and didn't seem to make sense to the players. So I don't know. I think that the adults are going to have to show up in the room to make a deal. And I just don't know if they're going to get there.
Steve, it's really interesting to hear you say that. It's a good perspective. And here's where I want to follow up. If I'm a player, I don't have a lot of trust for the owners for two reasons, and I want to get your reaction to this. One, the CBA is coming up after this year, and I think this is a way for them to push back where the starting point's going to be going forward for a salary cap, something that I'd be really opposed to if I was a player. And then two, as you touched on, they won't show me their books. Them telling me how impoverished they're going to be when they get tax breaks and all sorts of public money and all these different conditions for being an owner, I'm inclined not to trust them when it comes to this sort of thing. What's your reaction there?
Yeah, so a couple things. First, you know, there's been no indication from the owners that any part of a proposal is anything other than reacting to the pandemic. Right? It's, you know, the players threw out there when the owners, there was some thought of the trial balloon about a 50-50 revenue sharing plan. The union immediately said, no, revenue sharing equals salary cap. Well, not really, especially because all of the contracts have already been negotiated this year. And it's some way of sharing the wins and the losses, because if the owners look at it and say, if our revenue is coming from the playoffs and you get paid during the regular season and we don't pay you salary in the playoffs, which they don't. Players don't get salaries in the playoffs. They get salaries only through the end of the regular season. There's playoff shares that they can earn in the playoffs the further they advance, but they don't get salaries in the playoffs. And so the owners are looking at it and saying, we're going to pay you all of your salary, and then we're going to start the playoffs. And if we lose the playoffs, we lose the money that we were going to get to reimburse ourselves for having paid you for the regular season. And so there's no motive in this. Like, the idea that the union threw out there that the owners are using something to gain an advantage for this collective bargaining agreement, there's no advantage if the players say no to it. So you know, that part I don't get. The idea of opening the books. Tell me what companies, like if I work for Domino's and they're like, hey, we're going to cut your hours, we have to cut your pay a little bit, we're struggling here. I don't say, hey, show me your books. And the owners have never showed the players their books. And here's the issue. The issue is, I mean, there's no player that can look me in the eye with a straight face and say, you don't think the owners are going to lose money without fans being in the stands. We all know that that's true. Now, the owners have averaged that at 40% loss in revenues. Now, what is not clear is from that 40% loss in revenues, how much of that is just a complete loss? Is it a 40% loss, or is it a little less profit? You know, say it's 20% of that would have been profit and 20% would have been loss. Like, you know, so that part, I don't know the answer to that. And that's why the revenue sharing proposal had nothing to do with the salary cap. It had everything to do with there's a lot of risk involved here, because if we lose the playoffs, then we lose our ability to function. It would be catastrophic for the owners to pay the players prorated salaries and then lose the playoffs, because the playoffs this year is going to be close to $1 billion. It's about $775 million with the expanded playoff format they're thinking of. They think it could get close to $1 billion. That billion is not profit. That billion has already been paid out to the players and salaries by the time they get there. And if we lose the playoffs, then the owners are out that billion and the players have gotten paid. What the owners are suggesting when they think revenue sharing is that we share some of the risk that if the playoffs go away, it's not just the owners that are getting the catastrophic losses, but the players are losing out some part of that as well. And the owners have never opened the books. They did show them some part of the books and some part of what the losses could be. And it's really not that hard to calculate. Look at attendance numbers, come up with a projected what that person is worth going into the ballpark to that team. And you can come up with how much money that will be to a loss for each of the different franchises.
Steve, this is super informative and educational. I got a text from a player reacting to what you're saying. I just want to read this to you and get your reaction to what they said. They said, the quote, if it's not economically feasible to play games without fans in the stands is what it says. They have yet to show us it's not economically feasible, not even close, actually the opposite. They also say, and I'm just reading you what they're saying. I want to get your thoughts because what you're saying on the other side is a case that I haven't heard made, and it's strong, and I like it. They said their description of how much money they've made each year is 400% lower than Forbes' estimate, and Forbes nailed estimates on how much each team has made with 2% to 3%, but we're 400% high on the overall total. This is a current major league player texting me now. I'm just curious what you would say to that.
Yeah, a couple things. First, the Forbes estimates have zero connection to reality. None. They are the valuations of the franchises and all of those, the revenues that are generated and everything else. They have no concept of that notion. That is, and look, the Forbes does their best they can with some guessing and assumptions and projections, but they're not connected to they're just not. I mean, listen, here's the thing. I was in the front office for 13 years with the Mets. There are not two sets of books. What we did was we would budget to break even. We project revenues, work back off of that what minor league and scouting expenses would be, what operational expenses would be, and what the payroll would be, and sort of break even. That was our budget. Then if we won and went to the playoffs or had a good year, then we made money. And if we lost, then what we did is at the trade deadline, we try to cut our losses and mitigate those losses by making, you know, trades to trade away some of the payroll so that we didn't lose. We weren't going into a season thinking we're making $20 million to $40 million. The reality is, when I was there, we made more money with the Brooklyn Cyclones than we were making with the New York Mets. And so that's the other part. What is really difficult for me to understand is that the players' position, like I've never heard a single player explain to me, what did they think it meant in the agreement that they'd have to discuss in good faith the economic feasibility of playing without fans in the stands? What I don't understand is how could a reasonable person think about a baseball season and think, okay, you know what? We're taking away the fans. What could be anywhere from 1 million fans for the smaller market teams to 3.5 to 4 million fans for teams in large markets that have good teams that are going to draw and everything else. You take those fans out of the ballpark. Do you understand like all of the revenue that's associated with that number of people, not only what they paid for their ticket, but souvenirs, concessions, parking, everything else. And then the idea that that's not a significant part of a team's revenue, and that revenue is already accounted for with regard to minor league salaries, major league salaries, scouting, everything else, everything that goes into all of it. And so the idea that players want to see the books, they're not going to get a chance. They're not going to show them the books. They're just not. And here's the thing. Everybody's books are a little bit different. The players have the one thing that I understand the players have a complaint about is regional sports networks. For instance, if I own the regional sports network for my team, I don't cut a deal. Like I'm not buying the rights to broadcast the games because I own the rights to broadcast the games. Yet, as part of the valuation of the team, teams have to come up with what that value is. Like if they were to sell their broadcast rights to their team, what would they get? And I think they understate that in some regards. And so there's probably more value with the regional sports network than is what reported in all of it. The idea that Scott Boras is referencing this as a bailout, what I don't think the players understand is that it is a reality that if they want to play 82 to 110 games without fans in the stands, that it will be better for the owners to not play at all than to take – they'll lose less money by not playing at all than paying the prorated salaries 100% of the salaries and getting 60% of the revenue. If they don't have to pay any more of the salaries, they're in a better place than not having to deal with any of it and just starting fresh next year. So the players, in my mind, are in the same. They're going to do the same thing now that they did with the draft, which was the owners offered a 10-round draft. Right? They could do anywhere from 5 to 40 rounds. They offered a 10-round draft, and as part of it, because of cash flow, they wanted to reduce the level of pay for rounds 6 through 10 off of what they paid last year. And then they wanted to limit the number of players that teams could pay $20,000 to 5. The players balked at it, said, no, that doesn't work for us. We want those players to get the money. And what owners said was, okay, then we'll just have 5 rounds. So they negotiated and got less. And they're going to negotiate now, hold this position, and then they're going to end up getting nothing. And I don't understand the notion that they're doubting that owners are, that it's not economically feasible for teams to play without fans in the stands and pay a player 100% of the day rate when they're making whatever it is, 70%, 65%, or 60% of the revenues they were slated to make.
Steve, this was tremendous. Thank you so much for the time, man. Hope all is well with you and everybody staying safe, happy, and healthy. But thank you.
All right, you got it. No worries.
There's Steve Phillips on Grant and Danny. Look, you know how we felt. I mean, we've been on the player side of this. We have presented that side largely. I mean, as we always do, we've presented both sides. But we've made no bones about the fact of siding with the millionaires over the billionaires. Steve Phillips, a former GM, is on the other side and presents some strong arguments from the owner's perspective. Your thoughts on what he just said, if you want to react, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. We just had Steve Phillips on, the former general manager of the Mets. He's a baseball analyst at TSN and at MLB Network Radio. And we're actually going to track him back down and get him back on because I was just texting with him during the break. And he actually proposed a pretty cool idea, Danny, not just for how to make the financials work, but the format work. I said, oh, we'll talk about this. He said, well, let's chat about it. So we got him back on. So, Steve, we kind of left off. You were discussing, because Danny and I, as I told you, we've been kind of presenting the player side of this. I generally side with the millionaires over the billionaires. It's kind of where I come in on this. And I think there was a bit of a bait and switch here where, hey, we took our pay cut. Now you want another one? Because my initial thought was, I remember interviewing Davey Martinez the day they shut down spring training. I was at West Palm Beach. And we knew at that moment that there wouldn't be fans at Nats Park in a month. Now, I didn't know what was going to happen, and I'd still be doing shows in my basement right now. But he said, look, we're not going to be able to have fans for the unfurling of the banner. We'll wait as long as it takes. I kind of thought at that time the owners knew what they were getting themselves into, which is my big issue. But you're presenting the other side of it. But you think you've got something that could work here for the owners, the players to both win, and for us to get a baseball season.
Yeah, so I guess here's the way I look at it is in order to get a deal done, you have to consider what are the most important issues to each side. And, you know, part of it for the players is they want to make as much money as they can, but they also are hung up on the prorated salary issue, right? That's their thing. They don't want to give that up. And I think in some ways it's tied to Tony Clark because, you know, he lost the last CBA negotiation. He said coming out that they weren't going to, this was the prorated salaries, they're not going to budge on that, even though it's been documented that they knew what the clause meant in the agreement, you know, per the internal memo from the commissioner's office where they had conversations with the labor lawyers with the union. They knew what it meant if their fans weren't in the stands and they'd have to discuss economic feasibility. It meant a renegotiation. But they're hung up on prorated salaries. So here's the thing. So the issue for the players that needs to be addressed is make as much money as you can in prorated salaries. For the players or for the owners, the issue is, without revenues, without fans in the stands, each game they play, they lose more money. So the notion of adding games on to the 82 isn't going to fly with the owners at all because it just means more losses. They're logging more losses. The other thing that's critical for the owners is that the playoffs get played because that's the big payday. They get more money from that to be able to pay for the salaries for the players. So my thought is, make it a 65-game season, pay the players the prorated salaries. So from the owner's perspective, they don't want to do prorated salaries, but the fewer games reduces the loss a little bit. Instead of 82 games, 65 games, give them the prorated salaries. What it does is that you take away the sliding scale that you had with it. But what you do in a 65-game schedule, then you expand the playoffs to 24 teams, like what the NHL is doing. And the reason is the fewer number of games you play, the more you need to sort things out in a playoff format. That then allows the owners to then negotiate with the networks to get more revenue for the playoffs, which could go to generate the money to pay the prorated salaries, which go beyond what is, in their mind, reasonable because of the loss they're getting without fans in the stands. Plus, the 65-game schedule is allowing the playoffs to start in September, ensuring that the playoffs will get played and giving you a much better chance of those being played and completed so that you don't lose it because of the potential risk of the second wave of the virus. The 65 games at prorated salary pays players more than the 82 games with the sliding scale that the owners proposed. So, for instance, Mike Trout under my formula would make a little over $12 million, whereas in the owner's formula, he was making a little over $7 million. And he's, again, still going to be the highest paid player out there. But what it ultimately does is give the players what they want, the prorated salaries. They're going to make more in the 65 games with prorated salaries than they would playing 82 on any sliding scale or taking some percentage less. It gets the playoffs expanded to get more money for the owners. It starts it earlier to make sure that we get it in, and it answers all of the most important issues for the parties involved in the negotiation. Now, people say, well, 65-game schedule, why bother? I get it. 82 is it's more, but it's not really the full marathon of a season. It's still a sprint. And expanding the playoffs, I think, gives you the better chance to sort of deal with the hot team, not eliminating the great team from an opportunity to go into the playoffs. So a great team that was cold and just didn't get off to a great start, it still gives them a shot. And so I think that there's a way on a one-year basis and add in some revenue sharing if fans are allowed back in the stadium. So we're seeing that now potentially in Texas. And where it starts to grow, that's where you can add on some potential revenue sharing that if the market and landscape changes, then there could be some add-on for the players as far as revenue and salaries come into play.
It's a smart idea, especially with the expanded playoffs. I think everybody kind of wins in that one. Steve, thanks for jumping back on with us, man. That was really cool. I really appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We'll see.
Yeah, let's react to that as we continue here, that idea, that proposal from Steve Phillips and what it sorts out. You know, we can kind of –
smart, I think.
Grab the bullet points and make it succinct for people to understand of how that would look if that's how baseball returned as we continue. Grant and Danny on the Fan, we'll get your reactions. 800-636-1067. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. So the proposal Steve Phillips just kind of drew up to get baseball back, largely, I'd say, inspired by the NHL. He said players want prorated salaries. Owners can't afford prorated salaries without fans, according to them. So here's what he came up with. 65 games where the players get their prorated salaries. Players are going to make more in those 65 games than they'd make in an 82 game with the sliding scale that the owners are suggesting. So they've made progress. The owners don't lose as much because there are fewer games being played, and they're claiming that they lose hundreds of thousands of dollars for every game played. Plus, with the expanded playoffs, which is what the owners care the most about, the playoff money, the owners generate more TV money to afford the losses incurred by paying the players prorated salaries for those 65 games. Then you get the shorter regular season that allows for the playoffs to start earlier in September. It ensures the chance of them actually completing the playoffs. It's not a bad proposal. Your thoughts on what he said or any holes you try to punch in it?
So I'm trying to get my head around. I mean, I don't have economic figures in front of me, so it would be much harder for me to sort of dispute or refute anything in there. But the idea of the expanded playoff for this year, the kind of the tournament, is actually really exciting to me. And that makes sense, right? That's where the owners can recoup some of their cash if you believe their poverty case. I don't happen to, by the way. Or I think if they don't make as much money this year, or even if some are going to lose money, they can do what every other business does and get a loan against future earnings, which will absolutely come back when it comes to TV contracts and stadium money and everything else. But that's a side item. I think it's the best of both worlds. I really do. So you're going to have a sprint. You're going to have an awkward season, and a team that has a good 20 game stretch just happens to be hot. You know, do they end up finishing ahead of a team that we know that over 162 games would put up great numbers? You can equalize that by basically getting rid of the also-rans, the teams that are rebuilding that are purposefully bad, a la Marlins, a la Royals, et cetera, and have this really fun tournament. I think this could be a great opportunity. I really like that idea, Jeeps.
Yeah, the expanded playoffs are what sells me. Now, I don't agree with, as I mentioned during the interview with him, you know, everything he said from the player versus the owner standpoint. We're a little bit opposed on some of his stances, you know, the not having to open the book, some of those things. But I will say that this format that he drew up, I would sign off on, because I think while neither side's going to be happy, I mean, that's kind of how you get a negotiation done generally, is you both don't get exactly what you want, you get enough of it, and you figure it out. The bottom line is, do they want to play baseball this year or not? And I don't mean the players as much as the owners as well, both of them. Do they want to have a league or not? I don't love 65 games. I want more than that. I was on a radio show this morning, and they said, how many games do they need? And I said, right around half a season. I felt like around 81, 82 games. But the expanded playoffs make it work for me, to your point. I think that would be really exciting. Let's go to line one. Paul's in Gainesville, has been waiting patiently, wants to talk about what Steve just said. What's up, Paul? How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good,
very well. Thanks. What's up?
Well, listen, I enjoyed Steve. He's a great guest. One point I would make about opening the books, he said that if a guy worked for Domino's and he wanted a raise or something, he wouldn't look at the books. And true, he might not, but anybody can look at Domino's books because they're a publicly traded company, and they're on the Internet. You can look at them anytime you want. The difference is that Domino's employees aren't unionized, so they can't negotiate as a group. Because of that, but they certainly have access to the books. The players do have a union, and other unions like the auto workers or the Teamsters, when they negotiate with ownership, they certainly look at the books. So if the owners are telling the truth that they would lose money, why the resistance to opening the books?
That's been my point all along.
And that's been my point. Thanks for the call. I think it's a good call. The answer he gave is kind of it would be unprecedented. They never have. It's a bad practice to start now. And I understand he may have picked a bad example with Domino's because it's publicly traded, but there are private companies, I'm sure, that would refuse to open their books. But I get the point, and it's what I've been saying since the beginning. If you're telling the truth, why don't you show exactly what you're saying in the math being done? Why don't you show your work, so to speak? So I understand that logic. I also do understand to an extent that it is a practice that you do it now and you're expected to do it forever. And it's not something you have to do. It's something you have to choose to do. So I get both sides of it.
Well, so a couple things on this. The number one, the Domino's franchise, like down the street from me, if an employee wants a raise, that little individual franchise doesn't have to open its books. But the publicly traded, big picture, if you're talking about all employees everywhere, it's a different animal. So that, you know, individually, for example, if Juan Soto's going, open your books, I want a pay raise to the Nationals, that may not be something that's reasonable. But when you talk about the overall big picture, that, to the caller's point, is a little bit more reasonable. That's number one. And then number two, if I'm a player, if I'm from the player side, I'm not just walking into this going, oh, okay, this is the first time we've talked. I've had CBA negotiations. I've had the owners try to push back on things to get over, to show you what their priorities are. So the idea that this time it's just this altruistic good of the game, you know, we're trying to make sure we do right, but no, just trust us, even though we've tried to get you guys and win negotiations in the past, I would be skeptical. And I think, and again, I think Steve was outstanding, and it's a great perspective, but I think he kind of diminished that a little bit when it came to the CBA element of these things. A lot of these players have gone through it before, and they remember how these negotiations went, and I think that's part of the skepticism here about this particular round.
The World Series Rewind every day at the end of this 11:30 segment is presented by Waldorf Honda. Today we're looking at Game 3 of the National League Championship Series between the Cardinals and the Nationals. Guess who was great on the hill? Steven Strasburg. Weird. He was awesome all October, including in that third game of the NLCS at Nats Park.
Nationals 7, Cardinals 1, Game 3 LCS. Two on, two outs. Strasburg toes the rubber. Fowler digs in left side. Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss. He got him on a changeup. Steven Strasburg fans, a dozen St. Louis Cardinals over seven innings. How about that, Steven Strasburg? What a performance. On pitch number 117, he strikes out Fowler. He's getting huge high fives in the dugout with his night likely over.
What a beast. Just an epic run. That was the World Series Rewind presented by Waldorf Honda. We got 0%. We got zero down. We got zero payments for 90 days. Waldorf Honda has got it going on at waldorfhonda.com. One of the great things to come out of that playoff stretch for Strasburg is that he finally gets the credit he deserves. He'll never be called overrated again. He had such an excellent career going into the playoffs, and nobody really acknowledged that because of the hype beforehand. They were doing the Chase Young doesn't have 20 sacks this year bit, but now he finally gets the credit he deserves.
Rightfully so. Just a stud. Absolutely electric in that postseason. An unearned run to go with the theme of the first three games where the Nationals gave up zero earned runs through three games as a starting staff. That's a big fat zero earned runs through three games. A couple near-perfect games, and Strasburg equally as dominant at home. 117-pitch masterpiece. He was absolutely incredible.
Double play is next. It's Friday, so we'll try to win off the field. If you want to tell us how you're in the win column, give us a shout. 800-636-1067. A little teeny tiny moral victory for you. Going blitzing at noon today, right here on Grant and Danny.
Yeah, it's Danny Ruya here from the Pals at Ted Britt Ford. I'm a Ted Britt guy, and you should be too. When you buy from Ted Britt Ford, new, pre-owned, doesn't matter, anything less than 100,000 miles, you get Ted Britt for life. That's lifetime vehicle coverage. Includes powertrain, service loaners, battery replacement, windshield repair, nitro tire fill, and complimentary, this is complimentary, mind you, Virginia State inspection, all for life. Prices that can't be beaten, the best selection of new Fords, and two first-class service facilities in Fairfax and Chantilly. Ted Britt Ford always gives you more for your trade-in. 120% Kelley Blue Book value. That's not some weekend special. It's not some Labor Day shout fest. That's every single day. Ford makes the cars, and Ted Britt makes the difference. And they're built to help you right now. This Lend-A-Hand program is pretty amazing. The Built to Lend-A-Hand program, 0% financing for 84 months on 2019 models, 0% financing for 72 months on 2020s, plus no payments for 6 months. Let Ted Britt Ford take care of you the way they've taken care of me and so many thousands in the DM. Go see them and tell them, Danny Central.
With Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Beltway Blitz at noon, 10 minutes out on the teams you care the most about, and at 12:18. Some NFL items we got to get into, including the onside kick rule change we liked, failing, as the owner said, no thanks. Why does the injured reserve rule exist at all? Anyway, we're up to now three players who can return. Why can't all players who get hurt return when they're healthy? Something I've always wondered. And DeAndre Hopkins says he is the best wide receiver in the NFL. Do we agree with that? That's all coming up next hour on G&D. Coach Tom Sula sounds like he's munching on a protein bar. I wonder what flavor protein bar he's eating right now. Is it the chocolate chip Quest bar that I've been consuming over the last couple of days? Might it be something more delicious than that? One has to wonder. Yeah. But Danny, show people how winning off the field works.
It's got to be small. It's got to be basic.
Danny Rauer.
Thank you very much, sir. It's got to be very minimal. If it's a big thing, congratulations on that big thing. But take it away from this segment, 800-636-1067 is the number.
Such Danny Rauer.
Thank you very much. I'll give you an example here, Jeeps. Down here in the laundry room, it's not a great AC flow, okay, as it is throughout the rest of the house, okay? This laundry room is going to get a little bit toasty. Thank you, Coach. So what I discovered is there is a space heater that is in storage down here, okay? That's for wintertime. That's for times when it's cold out. It's not cold out, obviously. Well, what I discovered...
I wouldn't say that.
Well, hold on, Coach. If you turn the desired temperature way, way, way down into the 50s, it will occasionally spritz. It's a gentle spritz of a little bit of a cool Drew Brees. It's not all the time, and it's not effective as an air conditioning unit, but until my little space AC unit does get here, okay, I've got the ability to cool myself a little tiny bit instead of being a schwitzy mess during the radio program. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Attaboy. How long till comfort? When is what stop on the train is actual comfort?
Probably tomorrow.
Is actually damn good.
Thank you, Bruce. It's right now, the last couple days, since I realized that I could do this, it just shoots out a little bit of cool air just to make sure that I'm not dying. It's not often enough, and it's not good, but it's also not nothing.
So I'm actually right now, I'm sitting up straight. I'm going to stand up a bit. I'm going to look out my window into the driveway. My car has not been towed today.
Hey!
My car is in my driveway right now. It has not been towed. Therefore, I am
winning off the field.
I've got a cup of ice water here. You know what I do is I go to, I haven't been here in so long now. I haven't been to any restaurants in forever, it feels like. Mm-hmm. But I used to go to Mission Barbecue all the time. You know about Mission Barbecue?
Oh, yeah. It's delicious.
It's a great place. So I like their brisket fine. I love their ribs, though. Mission Barbecue's got great ribs. So I used to go get ribs at Mission Barbecue all the time.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Bruce. And they've got these huge cups they give you. You can buy a big, it's a plastic cup. It's like a 9/11 Never Forget cup, and they donate money to good causes like the military. Well, long story short, when I go to Mission Barbecue and I get these cups, I keep them all because I love big plastic cups for my ice water. So then I drink with a straw in my big plastic cup, and I pummel a bunch of water during the show. It's a great time for everyone. I left my water down here in the basement last night overnight, and I looked at it to see if it kind of looked gross, and it didn't. And then I tasted it, and it tastes fine. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field?
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. the water can taste old. This doesn't taste old. It tastes like I just made it, so it's fine.
I know exactly what you mean. The water I always leave by my nightstand, not by my nightstand, on my nightstand. I'll take
How many
a sip
cups
of it
are on your
morning.
Nightstand right now? Are you the six cup guy?
No, it's one at a time, and I do a good job of it, but it is. It's stale water because it's been left out overnight. But I need that water just in case I get very, very thirsty in my sleep. It's a weird habit that I have, but I do that.
I occasionally am not good about the cup thing. I'll be very honest with you. Mm-hmm. It is one of my wife's biggest frustrations with me. There are times, I would say, when there are several cups in my room. Because I every night bring a cup up to get the last couple of sips out of before I go to bed or whatever. And normally I try to wake up and bring the cup down, but when I clean my room every now and then, there's four or five cups coming down with me. I'm not very good at that. Not there's proud of it.
It's a great piece in the Seth Meyers Netflix stand-up special where he pretends – or he does stand-up as his wife talking about him, and it's a great bit that resonated where there's like seven or eight half-filled water glasses just sort of left around their house. It's perfect.
That – I would say that there are things that my wife gets mad about that she shouldn't about me that are very reasonable, normal, not in any way annoying things. And then there's that. And that one I'll give her. Like, you win that one. I wouldn't want someone leaving a bunch of cups around next to my bed either.
Right.
So, yeah, in that regard, I'm pretty awful. I agree with you. But right now, I got cups on my nightstand. I've been much better about it lately. We got nicer new nightstands, too, since we let's blitz next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, and next hour we'll hit the NFL hard.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.